Our speaker today was the speaker at our second retreat, which was down on the farm in Columbiana, where we camped out. Be thankful for your uncomfortable bed, because we camped on the ground, the hard Alabama red dirt ground. So this is a luxury for those of us who lived through that. But our speaker this morning was at our retreat. We were talking yesterday, and he said that he has a really exceptional inflatable ego. And so I'm fixing to say something that's going to provoke that, but I want to say it because I sincerely mean it. Our local fellowship was floundering, not in numbers. We had lots of people, but we were not working the steps. We were not sponsoring. We were not getting sponsors. And that turned around after Ken's presentation at our retreat. And we now have many people in our local fellowship who, in fact, have sponsors, who are sponsoring, to work the steps, and we're seeing the benefits. Seeing the benefits. So it's a real pleasure to introduce to you Ken C. from Dallas, who has been accused of being a big book thumper. Ken.
I'm Ken C. from Dallas. I'm a grateful recovered sex addict. Yeah. Yes, I have a big beard too. You may not have noticed. But here's the deal. One of the many reasons I grew my beard long was to keep the women at bay. I thought it would scare the women off. And what I found was that there are all kinds of people out there. And the kind of women it tends to attract is the kind that scares me off. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the problem. I'm going to identify myself. I'm going to show you how my behaviors fit the two-part model of addiction. Now, guys, I started with something as innocuous as the Sears catalog, right? The lingerie section. I mean, many of you can identify with it. Some of the younger people, well, probably not. But, of course, it didn't stay there because it wasn't enough. That high I got from that first look was no longer given to me by the same product. I see a Serenity t-shirt out there, Broncos Unite. Okay. Of course, it got worse. The material got worse. The behaviors got worse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That was the progression of the disease. I spent more time in it, more money in it, and so on. Towards the latter part of my disease, I was spending so much time clicking on images, masturbating, and so on, that I was neglecting my sleep. I was neglecting my diet. I was neglecting my exercise. That by the time I got into recovery and started doing some stewardship on my body, going to a doctor. I went to a doctor. He did a full work. I hadn't been to a doctor since I was in my parents' house. He did a full workup on me, full physical. And present in my bloodstream at the age of 37 were the proteins that precede a major heart attack or stroke. I'm paying the price today. I'm a diabetic. I was diagnosed like a couple years after that. But that is a direct result of my disease. This disease almost killed me, and I wasn't even aware it was killing me. But I did have an inkling that where this was going was not going to be good. Because what I was doing was stuff that would, in the end, I was looking at things that would put me in prison. And I had heard rumors what they do to people like that in prison. And I was certain, I was absolutely certain that I would end up dead on the shower room floor of some penal institution. And guys, you know, it may not have been looming right at that second, but it could have happened at any moment. All that was missing was a knock on the door, flash of a badge, and a search warrant. That's all that was missing. I could have been there. I could have had electronic jewelry on my ankle. That's where I could have been. I was certain it was going to kill me. I may not have died tomorrow or the next day, next week, but I was certain I didn't want to die that way. And more than that, guys, when I finally reached a place where I said, this is controlling me, I'm not in control of it. When I finally reached that place, I realized that this is going to kill me. And I can't live like this anymore. Another example of my inability to control. You know, in my single days, I'd go to a strip club and I'd have $40 in my pocket. I think I'd buy a couple drinks, tip the girls on the stage, pay for a lap dance, go home. Well, you know, they got these things called ATM machines there, right? And, you know, I'd say to myself, well, I just want one more. And so I'd go get another 20 with a $5 transaction fee, right? My bank statement would look like that for the whole night. $20, $5, $20, $5, $20, $5. And people would look at it and go, Ken, why didn't you just withdraw that money at once? You could have saved all those transaction fees. And I told them, I didn't want to spend all that money. I just wanted one more. Just one more. That's it. So, you know, and so the insanity was that after I blew all the money I had set aside for my electric bill, sat in the dark for 3 days until I got paid again, had to plunk down a deposit with the electric company. They're so unreasonable. And then after a time when I built up my reserves again and had an extra $40 in my pocket, what do you think I did? I thought to myself, this time will be different. And I went, and what happened? You know, I said to myself before I walked in, okay, more willpower. This is all the money you get to spend. What did my statement say again? $20, $5, $20, $5, $20, $5. I can't control it. Once I start, I cannot tell you where I'm going to be able to stop. Now, there were fleeting moments in my disease where I could control it. But guys, I got to tell you, in those moments, I wasn't really getting what I wanted. And those moments were fewer and further in between. So the next time I got caught back up on my bills and had extra $40, what do you think I did? I said, this time will be different, and I left the ATM card at home. I went, spent my $40, and went home. Got the ATM card and went back. That's my nature. It's the nature of my disease. It's the first part of my disease. It's a brain chemistry thing that once I get that chemical introduced into my system, I cannot tell you when I'm going to be able to stop. And it doesn't matter whether it's at the strip club or just looking at somebody walking down the street. By the grace of a very loving God, since December 17th of 05, I've not had to participate in adult-oriented establishments. Sex outside of my marriage, masturbation, pursuing provocative images, dancing with women I'm not blood related to or married to, participate in exhibitionism or voyeurism. Why? I worked a program. No, I didn't work a program. Well, I worked many programs in the beginning, and we'll get to that. But I worked the 12-step program. That's what gave me freedom. I don't have to worry today about where I go or what I do. If temptation comes, and guys, I understand, this disease is not like most addictions. You know, alcoholics don't have to worry about the bottle coming and tapping them on the shoulder and handing them the phone number. Call me. Right? Ours is the only addiction where the addiction pursues us. Right? Okay, so guys, at that point, sitting there, clicking on those images, I realized I can't stop. And I said to myself, I got to find a way to stop. And I don't know how to do that. But somebody, I can't be the only one in this world. In that moment, I can't stop. I finished the first part of step one. I am powerless over my addiction. But, you know, I realized that right at that moment, I can't be the only one. Other people must be like me. Other people must have found a solution to this. All I got to do is find them and do what they did. Find out how to stop. In that moment, guys, I realized that, you know what? It's not about me controlling this. I get it. I can't control. What I have to do is never start again. So what I need to do is find people who know how to quit forever and for good. Do what they did and move on with my life. So, you know, in a roundabout way, I thought therapy might be the answer. Called a therapist. I couldn't afford that. Didn't realize that they work scale, right? And then they directed me to a 12-step group. You know, and I think, oh, well, 12-step is a substitution for therapy. It's therapy for people who can't afford therapy, right? And so, you know, I find my way into a 12-step group. Nobody 12-stepped me. Nobody explained the two-part disease. If I'd landed in a healthy 12-step group, they should have sat me down and asked me some questions. Can you control it? Yep, no, I cannot. And I don't care anymore about controlling it. I want to know how to stop. Well, if I was in a healthy 12-step group, well, that's great, Ken. That's the first piece. What have you tried to stop? I would have honestly answered, I haven't tried anything. This is my first thing. And a healthy 12-step group would have said, well, here are some suggestions. Why don't you exert more willpower to stop completely, to never do it again? Not to control it, but to never do it again. Okay, I'll try that. And then that would have failed me. And then I could have come back to them and they said, well, have you tried therapy? Well, no, I haven't. I thought those guys were too expensive. Well, some guys work scale. Here's the name of a couple of therapists that are real good, and they work scale, and I would have gone to try that. I eventually did. That's part of my story. But, you know, they would have suggested all the things, all the human powers that they tried, and said, go try those things before you try this. But that's not what happened to me. Nobody 12-stepped me. I just knew I couldn't control it, and there was no way I was ever going to be able to control it. And that what I had to do is find someone to show me how to stop. So I'm going to get to all the things I tried. But, you know, at some point when I finally found recovery, I was angry at God for a little while. Because I wondered why I had to spend 4.5 years doing all that stuff inside 12-step meetings before I found the real solution. And it's in a lot of what I want to talk to you about tonight is that, you know, looking back at the past on where I was, it helps me in sponsoring other men. They have to be at the same starting point that I was. I didn't know about unmanageability yet. I had not tested my unmanageability. I cannot manage my most sincere decision to stop and stay stopped for good and for all. I will eventually, if left to human means, my own power, or any other human power, I will eventually say yes again. In every barrel of no's, there's at least one yes. I can testify to that. Sometimes you can go through the whole barrel of no's in a day. How many times do I have to say no to stay sober on my own power? Infinite. Until I'm dead. How many times do I have to say yes to fail? The odds are against me. I'm not going to be able to do it on my power. So, guys, I came in willing. I was ready to do whatever they said. And the suggestions were, go to meetings, read this literature, And what else was there? Define your sobriety, which I have the same sobriety definition that I did in the beginning. Yes, I wanted to stop. I didn't want to moderate. I didn't want to control. I didn't want to do a masturbation maintenance program. I wanted to stop. And I was willing to go to any length. Guys, talking about that, on page 24 of your big book, it says, the fact that is that most alcoholics, or in my case, sex addicts, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Or in my case, selfish sexual behavior. Now, I couldn't put it into words at that moment, but my willingness level is that this, if I have lost the power of choice, and nowhere in this book do I see a promise that the power of choice will be returned to me, that means I will never have the power to choose yes or no, ever. What I had to do in the beginning, what made me at the starting point, is a willingness to surrender my right to choose. Choosing is no longer my problem. It's my higher power's problem. Guys, I'm not an animal. I do have the power of choice. And a power of choice should involve, because I'm not an animal, I have a spirit, and then the power to choose is what separates me from the animals. I have a spirit. That means I ought to be involving God in all my decisions, and most particularly the one that brought me in these rooms. It's not my choice anymore. So what does that mean? The promise is my obsession is removed, right? And if temptation comes, I react sanely and normally. And here's another example. You know, I had this little girl at work that was always flirty with me, you know? And then she started to get a little bit huggy. And the power to choose, well, the reaction was, get away from me. And after a couple of times of that, I had to say, no, this has to be solved. So I sat down with her and my boss and said, I want to be friends with you, but I want to be friends with you over there. We don't need to do any of this huggy stuff. Now, I hug women today, but you know what? They got no designs on me. They don't flirt with me. Okay? I hug lots of women that it's not a problem because they're not scheming or designing how to lure me away from my wife. They're safe, and I can see it. That's another gift of this program. I know temptation when I see it. And when I'm tempted, I react sanely and normally. Do I choose? No. I go, oh, crap, I got to get out of here. Sorry for the crap. It's actually not a cuss word. It's a guy's name. Or an abbreviation for guys. Anyway, so guys, the suggestions I'm getting, and in the beginning of my recovery, I'm doing exactly what they tell me to do because I'm willing to go to any lengths. I, in the beginning, did 90 meetings in 90 days and did that several times. But what was keeping me sober during those first 2 years, 8 months, and 10 days was ego. I was self-driven. I'm going to be the guy that works a perfect program. I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be the example. I'm going to put on my game face, right? That's all self-driven. That's all my ego going 100%. That's how strong my ego is. I got this disease, and that ego kept me sober for 2 years, 8 months, and 10 days. That's, Jim was talking about my ego. That's how strong my ego is. But the day came when it failed me. And, you know, 8 months before that first slip, I knew something was wrong. I knew that if these steps are supposed to change who I am inside, it ain't happening. I'm the same guy coming to the same problem. And where did that get me before? Nowhere. So, you know, again, the suggestions. You know, after a year of staying sober, one of the guys in the group asked me to sponsor him, and I say no. And I tell my sponsor, and again, I'm calling my sponsor every day as directed, going to meetings, 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 right? Talking about my problems, sharing, even leading a few of the meetings. This guy asked me to sponsor. So I tell my sponsor and told him I said no. He said, why'd you say no? And I said, well, don't I have to work these steps first? And he says, you haven't worked these steps? And I said, I've been waiting for you to tell me what to do. Guys, in truth, and on reflection, he was not my sponsor. He was my drama coach. Okay? No, seriously. He was nothing more than an accountability partner. That's a human power. Meetings are a human power. Accountability partners are a human power. Chanting affirmations in the mirror, that's me applying more human power to make me better. Those are great methods, but you know what? Those are human powers, and they can't keep this kind of weird, goofy, strange addict sober. I need freedom, and that's what this program is about. Because, guys, I felt really good when I went to my first meeting. The fact that these people talked honestly about their disease, I identified with them. These guys, I'm in the right place. And that feeling of relief was immense. It was awesome, and I thought it was the spiritual awakening. But it wasn't. It was part of that ego thing that kept me sober for a while. But it's not the solution. So guys, he said, well, Ken, you know, what you do is you get a bunch of these newcomers together, and you get one of these step guides written by these various therapists, you know, the egg model or the easier, softer path, or you know, stuff like that. And you sit down and you meet together regularly at a given time, and y'all go through this guide. Well, that is the culture of sponsorship that I come from. Guys, I've learned that what a sponsor does is works one-on-one with me to show me what he did to get sober. If I'm going to get sober, I have to find someone who had the same problem, who found a solution, and I have to duplicate what they did. It's that simple. But no one's showing me what they did. We were a bunch of guys who were new, who had never worked the steps before, using this guide. Yeah. And I'm not going to go into detail on that. And it's not working because we're the blind leading the blind, number one. And what I came to find out later on is that stuff was actually self-therapy guising itself as 12-step. It wasn't actual 12-step. No wonder it wasn't working. Guys, when I walked in the door, I was ready to do anything. And what I learned what I was doing was standing there with a blindfold on and a bunch of darts at my hand, throwing them at a wall, hoping that I would hit something. Dart after dart after dart. But no one was showing me, no, let me reveal this to you. Let me take that blindfold off. Let me give you the right dart and point at the target for you. Eventually, after I had my slip, I couldn't put together 60 days. And I'm desperate, and I'm going around the fellowship asking people, what do I got to do? What do I got to do? What do I got to do? The best suggestions I'm getting. Go to more meetings. Call your sponsor every day. Work steps out of one of those guides. Call more program buddies. All human powers. All human powers. Guys, I'm going to 12 meetings a week when they're telling me this. I'm doing an hour worth of work in that stupid guide. I'm calling 5 program buddies a day, and I'm calling my drama coach every day, just as directed. And I am still restless, irritable, and discontent. And I'm grabbing people by the lapel saying, show me how to do this so that I don't act out. God's a big man, a big guy. And he, in that moment where I finally realized that all this stuff I'm doing, all this stuff they're suggesting doesn't work on the type of addict I am. And guys, there's a lot of people doing that stuff in our fellowship, and they're getting the sobriety they want. And I'm happy for them. God bless them. But maybe they don't have the same problem as me. I'm, and I, it's in sponsorship, I've sat across the table from a love addict and go, I do not identify with your obsession. I don't know what planet you're from, but I'm from Mars, okay? You must be from someplace else. You know, I tell this story about an alcoholic friend of mine who knows my deal. He says, Ken, I have this problem. I'm wondering how you masturbate without fantasizing. I said, I don't know. Well, what do? I don't. He looked at me strangely and said, what do you mean don't? I mean, I don't. Well, what's wrong with a little masturbation? Well, nothing except I don't know how to do a little masturbation. And he said, oh, come on. How bad can it be? And I said, to the point of self-injury. And he goes, oh, my God, that's insane. Guys, I cannot sponsor somebody who doesn't have my problem. Further, all those later on in sobriety, I found the 12-step program in this book. You know, someone asked me to sponsor them through that easier, softer path. And I talked to my sponsor about it. He says, Ken, you tried that before a couple times, right? I said, yeah. And did it keep you sober? No. Well, are you making this about your personality instead of the 12-step principles, thinking you can be all things to all people, that the solution is you and not the program? Oh, yeah. Okay. So, you know, I have to be careful. I can't sponsor someone I don't have the same problem as. I don't sponsor people in a program I don't know how to successfully work. Otherwise, I'm playing with their life because my disease is deadly. Guys, so right about that time, I'm going, what I'm seeing in the fellowship is not what's on the wall. Further, I'm reading on this 12-step literature, the big book, and I'm finding out stuff that blows my mind. Like, do I have it here? Yeah, here it is. You know, how many of you know of the book Pass It On? Page 190 says, by setting forth a clear statement of the recovery program, a book could prevent distortion of the message. Follow along the logic with me here, guys. Bill Wilson, yeah, who had some issues even after he got alcohol sober, was only a documentarian. All he did was write down what the program was to him. And then he sent it out to the whole fellowship, who edited it and says, no, Bill, you're wrong here. Bill, you left out this over here. No, we did it differently over here. Oh, wait, let me check with the rest of the program. They said, yeah, they did that way too. Okay, well, together they came up with the program. They all, after it was edited and written up completely, there were no more corrections. Everyone agreed this is the program we worked that got us and keeps us sober. It was approved by the whole fellowship and published. So, they published this book to prevent a distortion of the program, a distortion of our message. So, if I can't reconcile it with the first 164 pages of this book, plus the doctor's opinion, what is it? It's a distortion of the program. Logic. So, I'm studying. I go, wait, so what I'm hearing in these, and what these people are doing does not line up with what's in this book. So I don't understand. They're staying sober with it. I'm not. What's the deal? Maybe you're different. Maybe you don't have the same disease. You know, Dr. Silkworth said, he said, these chronic or was allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form. Guys, he had treated lots of people who drink too much, but he considered them all alcoholics. So there's different, in his mind, there's as a clinician, there's a different types of alcoholics. You know, I see these people working a different program than me. They're sober, they're happy, or what they call sobriety anyway. Some of them are working that maintenance program. God bless them. They're happy with it. That's fine. Super, wonderful, great. But you know what? They're not like me. They're of a different type. Like I said, love addicts, I don't get it. Sexual anorexia, I don't understand it. I don't have that problem. So, where am I going with this? So this guy shows up in our fellowship about the same time. And I haven't met him yet, but some of my friends I'm talking to about this stuff say, there's another guy who just moved here, and he's saying a lot of the same things. And so I got to meet this guy. So again, I did 90 and 90. Well, actually, I was doing more than 90 and 90, but to find this guy. And so I finally found him. And I said, I need you to show me how to do this. And he pointed these things out to me. And for the first time, someone explained to me the twofold problem. Once I start, I can't control it. And once I want to quit for good and for all, I have a mind that convinces me to try it again. Over time, the insanity comes up. It creeps up on me. It's the subtle insanity that, you know what, this time might be different. If you did it this way, you might have a different result. Here's my truth. I cannot start and tell you when I'm going to stop, and it might kill me. My truth is that my mind is unreliable. It will eventually tell me to start again. It will eventually give me a reason or an excuse to say yes. And I'm off on another spree, and who knows where the consequences are going to take me this time. So this guy, he finally showed me that, and I go, oh, I understand now. I had that first step experience where I realized I'm screwed. I get it now. Me relying on me is not going to get me anywhere. Me relying on any other human being is not going to get me anywhere. I am not going to do this by any of that other stuff. And I had that first step experience where, oh, that's it. I'm crazy. I cannot rely on what my brain tells me because it will lie to me. It does all the time. And all I do is just bang on the wall and say, shut up in there. I'm listening to my heart now. The place where God talks to me. The still small voice. I still got insane thoughts. But I've been given the gift of sane action. Okay, so guys, that's how I got to where I am. He took me through the steps over a weekend, which is the way the program's supposed to be worked, quickly. How do you do it quickly? Well, you don't spend 8 months in a formal first step. That's the first thing. That comes from the treatment centers. That's an intervention method. It's got nothing to do with 12-step. But guys, so that's part of the problem. Part of the problem I was having and not getting it is because I was completely giving myself to several programs. Get it? Oh, Native American saying, he who stands with one foot each in two canoes ends up wet. Right? And from the big book, he who chases two hares catches neither. And guys, if you can do that and stay sober, God bless. But you may not have the same problem as me. I am what they call a chronic addict of the hopeless variety. That all that human stuff is going to net me zero. Okay? In the end, it will fail me. So guys, Jim, what's the time like? How am I doing? Okay, we're good. Okay, somebody give me a high sign at 5 minutes, okay? All right. So, guys, this is the thing. We went through the work quickly, like the big book says to do. You don't believe me? Ebby Thatcher was sober in 2 months, and it's 12-stepping Bill. Bill Wilson went through the work in the 12 days he was in Towns Hospital and helping other alcoholics before he left, carrying the message to them. Dr. Bob went to step 8 in 3 weeks, balked, got drunk for a week, and did the rest of the work the next day. He did 9. He found the willingness in step 8, did 9 through 12 the next day. It can be done. It says on page 118, we do not like the thought that a book or the work of another alcoholic has accomplished in a few weeks, that for which we struggled for years. Guys, the object is to get the spiritual awakening as quick as possible and have the tools of 10, 11, and 12, which are my biggest guns against the addiction, in my pocket, ready to go while I'm still going through withdrawal. That's the object. Well, what if I'm working with a guy and he can't stay sober long enough to finish the steps. Well, how long are you taking in the steps? You take him more than a month. Good grief. Move. Get the work done. So guys, you know, we decided, you know, I've been talking to a guy online who was pointing out the same things to me. I went to a local AA group where they are on fire for God in these steps. Biggest meeting in Texas. They only meet 3 times a week. Okay, and there's over 200 people there every week. When I go there, in the beginning, they ask for who's available for sponsorship. 80% of the room stands up. I had to go to like 5 or 6 meetings to see one guy hold his hand up, right? I went to the first meeting, and there was a guy there who knew I wasn't a regular. I don't know why he thought that. I don't know how I stood out from the crowd that showed up that day. But he crossed the quad and he said, "Hi, I'm Rick. I'm an alcoholic." He said his last name, but I don't want to blow his anonymity. So he says, "I'm Rick. I'm an alcoholic." And I sheepishly said, I'm Ken. I'm a sex addict. He says, "Come on in, buddy. We've been waiting for you." And he brought me in and he sat me down and he called some guys and he got me a seat. He told me where the coffee was, where the bathroom was. And he got some guys, and we all sat around and talked for a little bit, and they said, "Ken, we are so glad you're here, because we want you to succeed in our program, because we have been sending our protégés over to those other meetings for years, and every time they come back to us and say, 'Please don't ever send me there again.' Why? Because they're dark tunnel meetings. That's what they call them in Iceland. Dark tunnel, what does that mean? There's no light at the end. It just goes on and on with no hope. I call them shoe meetings because that's what everybody's looking at. This guy's looking in my eyes, shaking my hand, telling me who he is, and accepting me as a sex addict and not wanting to wash his hands afterwards." Which I experienced a lot of when I was trying to do all those 90 and 90s, because we didn't have meetings on my schedule that I could do 90, so I had to pick up some AA meetings. Show up there and say, "Yeah, I'm a sex addict." "Oh, okay, that's cool. All right, there's a seat over there. Just hang out." It was different at this meeting. They accepted me openly and wanted me to succeed because their guys are struggling with the same thing. They're hearing 12-step in their meeting, and they go to our meetings, and all they hear is how bad my day was, or what my therapist said. And I got nothing against therapy, guys. I've done therapy. I've benefited greatly. And off the mic, I will tell you how that helped me. But it could not keep me sober. It could not solve my restless, irritable, and discontented. Did the therapist help me focus in on some resentments and some fears? Yes. But then I took those back to my sponsor in the form of an inventory and did the work. That's the key, guys. You know, I get this from these stupid tapes that y'all recorded last time. "Oh, Ken, I listened to your talk. It was so great." I don't even know what I said. But you know what? Like Jim said, I got this sensitive ego, and I don't want to hear that stuff. What I want to know is how you took the steps and apply them to your life and the miracles that are happening in your life. Guys, they tell you about a few of the miracles. In sobriety, we had a flood. We had a flood, and I had 13 inches of water in the house. The miracle of that was when we had to tear out the sheetrock, we found all kinds of wiring code problems and gas plumbing problems right next to each other. God sent a flood to save our lives. This spring, we had another. We had 3 inches of water in the house. Yes, we lived in a floodplain. Yes, we've got enough sense now to do something else about it, like not live there. But guys, you know, God has really blessed me. The house that's half the size of the house that I'm living in now, we sold it for more than the house I'm living in now. We got twice the land, twice the space, and went from a 2-car carport to a 3-car garage. Guys, I understand when God sends me something that most people interpret as punishment, it's not so. I said a 3rd-step prayer, okay? That means this here is not mine anymore. It never was. When I say that third step prayer, I'm making peace with the fact that it always only belonged to God. And I've told this story before. It's been happened to me twice now. I had the catalytic converter stolen out of my truck. But, you know, did it upset me? I go, it happens. Stuff happens. I did some reading. You know, it's a common thing, particularly with my model truck, is, you know, it's real accessible. But, you know, you got some palladium in there and some platinum in there, and whoever stole it gets to go hawk that, and, you know, they get enough money to do whatever. But I thought, you know, there's two possible types of people that could have done this. One, this is a guy who's out of work and needs to feed his kids. And my prayer at that point was, God, please bless this man. Help him use that money wisely. Because he needs to feed those kids and pay that rent. God, help this man find a job. Because if he gets arrested for doing this again, where will those kids be? The other possibility was that it's an addict. And my prayer was, God, if this is an addict, God bless him. Help this fix get him to a bottom or closer to it. And when he finally finds that real bottom where he's done for good and for all, help him quickly find a solid 12-step group that's going to take him through the work quickly. Get him to a spiritual awakening. Guys, I talk about this AA group, this huge AA group. They only meet 3 times a week. And, you know, most of the AA groups, they got 3 meetings a day. And I asked them, why y'all could easily do that many meetings? They told me, well, Ken, this isn't our recovery. This is where we learn to better apply our recovery. You know, I don't know if you know it, Ken, but this group here hits every halfway house, prison, jail, in the Metroplex. This group here carries this 12-step message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We don't wait for newcomers to plop in our laps in a meeting. The meetings are not for that. The meetings are for better application of our program of recovery and how to tutor ourselves and make ourselves more efficient at carrying the message to the alcoholic. I was telling Walter, you know, you don't have to mic me with these speakers. If you turn these speakers off, y'all could hear me in the back. They probably hear me out there. Because every week, I got calluses. Every week, I'm in a halfway house for people being paroled, and I'm talking over a TV that's turned up all the way. And a lot of the times, you know, the newcomers, the guys new to that halfway house, they're still watching the TV at the other end. They try to stick it out. But after a week or two, they realize they're not going to hear that TV at all, no matter how loud they turn it up. Because, anyway, the point is, I don't ever have to go to another meeting for the rest of my life. Oh my God, what did you say? Guys, my program is surrender yourself to God as you understand God, admit your faults to Him and your fellows, clear away the wreckage of your past, and give freely of what you find to others. I don't need a meeting to do any of that. They could outlaw meetings tomorrow, and I could stay sober for the rest of my life. What I will not give up is my service, carrying the message to the sex addict that still suffers. That's where I see, you know, can't get involved in service in the fellowship. I tried that, but you know what? It's nothing like going out there and carrying the message. And guys, I can tell too, when I miss a week because I'm sick or because I'm out of town or something, I don't get to go do that. I notice that I'm a little more selfish this week. I'm a little more self-focused. And I have to work a little harder to get God to help me get focused on others. Guys, I go to carry that message not for them, but for me. How many times does this book say to do that? It even says it about sex. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We work for their needs. This takes us out of ourselves. That's what this whole thing is about. God didn't give me a spiritual awakening so I could sit in a meeting. God gave me a spiritual awakening because He has work for me to do. He's got things He needs me to do. There are people out there dying who don't know what their problem is. I do. They struggle and they try and they, you know, they break a sweat doing it. And they finally figure out, you know, I can't. And at some point, they're going to go back out. They're going to get stabbed by a pimp, mugged in a Murphy scam, shot by a jealous spouse, theirs or someone else's. But most of the time, they die alone in a hotel room with a gun. Yeah, and by the way, if that's the eventual end of any of those guys, including myself, I will stop acting out then. If I'm dead, I will not act out anymore. I don't want that solution. And that was actually something I was thinking about. Guys, I was willing to surrender my entire sex life at that first step moment because the option was to die. It's either die or surrender. Guys, you know, I explain it to my sponsees or my new guys this way. In World War II, the Germans... They got the Russians on the Eastern Front, and they got the Allies on the Western Front. They've heard what the Russians do to their prisoners. They go to Gulag and usually freeze to death or starve to death or die of disease or something to that effect. But they've heard that the Allies, you don't get to do what you want anymore. You probably have to live somewhere that's kind of meager and probably don't get to come and go as you like, but you know what? You get three hots and a cot. I don't want to live my way anymore. Because all that stuff I wanted trying to get it only got me here. That's the road behind me. That's my other choice. And if I'm in a place where I'm choosing to be sexual, that's me walking back down that road. I'm ready to surrender to a higher power instead of my addiction because surrendering to my higher power means I get to live. The other way means I will die. The number one symptom of any addiction is depression. Whose experience is that your addiction is not progressive? Is not progressive. No hands. What's your experience with diseases that get worse? Do the symptoms get better or do they get worse? They get worse. You say, you think to yourself, I'll never commit suicide. I'll never think about that. Oh, it's not that serious. Okay, yet. Guys, and that's just a first step jumping off point. That's just the place to be ready. That's the starting point. To do what? Work the steps. It's that simple. And guys, you know, if you're afraid of that, okay, go act out some more. You'll eventually get to a place where you're more afraid to go back to that than you are to surrender to this program. You will get to a place where you realize that that means death. This way means life. Well, I don't know what's going to happen or what I'm going to have to give up. Everything is what you'll have to give up. But you know what? You'll live. And you'll be happy. I don't get to have my way. Yet, my sponsor, when he had me say the third step prayer, he had me write in the back of my big book, a letter to Ken from God. Dear Ken, you will never have your way again for the rest of your life. Love God. P.S. If you do the work in this book, you will thank me for it one day at a time. What's that mean? It means my way got me here. God has other plans than mine. And now I'm okay with that because my plans got me misery. Do I know what God has planned? Does that scare me? I don't know what He has planned, and often it makes me a little nervous. But if it does, it means there's something I got to surrender, namely my plans. Because if I'm scared, my plans are being threatened. How about that? So, what I got to do is surrender to God's plans. Do I know what they are? No, but they're better than where I was. Whatever that ends up being, it's got to be better than back there. I don't care. I mean, following God's will, it's my... And Tom talked about it last night at the meeting, that, you know, that bridge gets more firm under my feet, even though I can't see where the next step is going to be. Are you sure you want me to turn left here? Well, wait, what are my options? Yes or no? No means I'm going back. You sure you want me to make that amends now? Ken, I put him in your life. You hadn't seen that guy in 20 years. You don't know how to get hold of him. And you see him in the grocery store. It's time. You've been looking for him. You couldn't find him, and there he is. It's time to do it. Are you sure, God? Well, come on. Guys, if you're working a program, and working the program, and you find yourself at a spiritual plateau, and you find yourself coasting, and you're starting to feel a little distant from God, I have found that God is usually back standing where He asked me to do something, and I didn't do it. You know, God didn't leave, I did. What I need to do is go back and take care of that, and I can get reconnected. Life in recovery is a glorious thing. The most precious gift of it is a purpose. I have a reason, not just a reason. You know, churches, they have mission work. You know, they feed, clothe, visit the sick, etc., go to prison, etc., etc., etc. I have a very specific mission that this program has given me. Something that a church can't do, because not all of those people have experienced what I've experienced. Not all of those people have the disease I have. That disease is so special. It gives me, talking about that with a new guy, gives me the ability to get a key into his lock. Or plant a seed for a later day. And guys, you know, doing this 12-step work, you might lose heart because you're not seeing any result. I can tell you that I've never, out of that halfway house I go to every week, I've never successfully gotten a man through the work there. They always weird out or something. They get soft. They get feet of clay pretty quick. But you know what? I'm planting a seed. And I know that for a fact, because there was a guy that got a home plan. He'd been attending my meeting for a couple of years. He got a home plan. He left. I never knew what happened to him. 2 years later, he calls me and says, "Ken, I'm going to drink." And I said, "Well, drink on, buddy." He said, "No, I don't want to drink." "Ah, okay, you're going to drink, but you don't want to. Now we've got something. Let me hook you up with some alcoholics." 2 years later, this guy kept my phone number. When I go in there to that halfway house, I want to make sure they've got three things: how to diagnose themselves, how to find a good meeting, and what sponsorship, working the program with a sponsor, looks like. If they go into a meeting where they're looking at their shoes, go to a different meeting. And if their sponsor is doing anything that they can't reconcile with this book, get a different sponsor. Plain and simple. But I know God is working in my life, and through my work, He is doing something with these men that I don't often get to see. And like I said, I've got a sensitive ego. It swells at the slightest attention. If I was successful with those men, and I could see that I was successful with those men, that I might start thinking it's all about me. I'm the message. But God knows that I have a sensitive ego, so he doesn't let me see the fruits of my labor. Now, I've gotten guys through the steps. I've worked with lots of men, a couple of women. Some failures, some succeed. But I got to let go of the result. It's not my job. The 12th step does not require any results. Oh, Jim there talked about in the big book that God never required anyone to achieve anything. The only thing he ever asked of anyone in that book was to obey. Okay, so my 12th step says we tried. And why do I do it? Again. Guys, this book says it again. You know, Bill Wilson, the first 6 months, he hadn't succeeded with any alcoholics. He was starting to lose heart, but Lois pointed out to him, Bill, wait a minute, you've been sober for 6 months now. You hadn't been that sober since I've met you, and you still appear to be reasonably happy. You still have some serenity. Don't stop working with drunks. Don't stop because you're sober. Guys, the reason I do the 12th step is because of the effect it has on me. And I need to keep humble and not worry about the results of my labor. Because it's God that provides the miracle. You know, I can cast, I can prepare the field. No, actually God prepares the field. You know how to prepare a field? You plow it, you turn it into the top layer, you turn it upside down by plowing it. And then as the farmer, you know, he spreads the manure onto, well, that was my life. My life was turned, before I found recovery, my life was turned upside down and I was sitting in fertilizer. That's how God prepares us, is that we keep trying to push our way in this life and we end up with that result and we go, what did I do wrong? What I did wrong was keep trying to tell God what I wanted instead of asking God what He wants and trying to do that. Make sense? Oh. So, guys, we're an army with a specific mission. Our commander asks us to make an effort. He doesn't ask for us to achieve a result. Why? Because we're being obedient, and that brings us closer to Him, which improves our spiritual life, that helps us grow. Guys, in this relationship with God, I mean, they're real clear about it on page 63. They tell us what our role is in this relationship with God. He is the director. I am the stagehand. He is the employer. I'm the entry-level employee for life. He is the father. I am his red-headed stepchild. Sorry about that. Okay. All right. So this is what we're supposed to be about, individually and as a fellowship. Reaching outside of our meeting. Not sitting and doing the easy thing of waiting for them to show up and drop in our laps. We got to do the hard work. And guys, what if I lose my anonymity? Guys, there's an episode of Band of Brothers. I don't know if y'all know about that miniseries. Anyway, there's this captain that everybody thinks is crazy because he doesn't have any fear. And, you know, someone asks him about it and says, you know, what we're afraid of is dying. And to get over that fear is we got to, and I'm paraphrasing, we got to reconcile the fact that we're already dead. Guys, I'm not afraid of my anonymity being busted. The only reason I keep my anonymity in some places is to protect the people it would harm by that. I don't tell everybody at work. Most of them know that I'm involved in some sort of 12-step thing. They don't know what, but that would open them up to all kinds of problems if they did know. So I keep my anonymity there. If I'm worried about losing my anonymity, I got to make peace with the fact that it's already happened. It's just a matter of time. I've made peace with the fact that, yeah, maybe my employer will find out what my problem is. God will provide. If that fear is controlling you, there are ways around it. You can still reach out in your community. You can write letters. You can send postcards. You can call people on the phone, and that will not violate your anonymity. There are ways in this day and age to do that. Move on. Stop letting your fear be your God. Let God be your God. You're worried about your anonymity. Who's controlling you now? Right? You're being ruled by fear. That's what it is. God bless. When you get over that, God has a mission for you. God has something He wants you to do that only you can do, because you're the only one that knows how to talk to someone who has the same disease. You know, Dr. Bob had talked to people for years about alcoholism, read a lot about alcoholism, but it wasn't until another alcoholic sat down with him and made the identification. Yeah, you know your stuff. And not because you read it in a book, but because you lived it. That's what equips you to do that unique thing that no one else can do. Get busy. I don't have time to sit and spew my stuff in a meeting. I got better things to do. You know, if I need to check in, the program says I call my sponsor. I don't spew it at a meeting. It's called doing a 10th step. We call our sponsor and talk about what drama we're dealing with today. He helps us figure out where we're being selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. And we work through the rest of the steps. I ask God to remove it, go apologize to whoever I hurt, go be helpful to someone. It's that simple. But guys, you know, it baffles me sometimes. Some of the people I've sponsored, you know, about, I need to work on myself some, so I'll get back to you. Self is my problem. That's my problem. And they didn't get it. And God bless. Maybe they will one day. Not my issue. That's their issue. That's God's problem to show them where their problem is. But me sitting around talking about me is not the solution. The solution is figuring out where I'm still focused on me and then telling people how I got free of that. Not sitting in a meeting. Guys, I don't know what else to tell you. Did I have some wonderful experiences prior to finding the 12 steps and doing that stuff in the 12-step meetings? You know, that egg model, easier, softer path, facing the whatever it is. Yeah, I had some good experiences. Yeah, there were some spiritual moments where a light bulb came on and I got it for a second or two, but it was not lasting. What the 12-step program gives me is a lasting spiritual experience, a spiritual experience I can have every day. But if I'm going to keep it, I've got to give it away. There's no way around that. I cannot just sit in a meeting and wait for someone to show up that I might be able to help today. Guys, let's think about this. Where would our fellowship be if we lost our fear of our anonymity being broken? What would people think about sex addicts if we finally got out there and were brave enough to tell them what the problem is? How many more people will go, you know, I've struggled with this for years. Bing! How much more would society accept that this is a problem? It's a widespread problem. If we had the faith and bravery to step outside of our safe little meeting and do what we're supposed to be doing. I don't know. I have to think it would be better. That society's view of us would be less, they would less often look at us like cockroaches. They would less often want to wash their hands after they walk away. Because if we got out there and put it out there, I'm not saying purposely violate your anonymity. What I'm saying is stop being afraid of it. But if we got out there and they finally, there's all these people that are struggling with it and they finally figure out what their problem is, yeah, I got an uncle who struggles with that. He struggled with it for years. Everybody will know someone who's a good person at heart but struggle with this thing just like the alcoholics. If we lost our fear and started doing what the step says to do. I don't know what the result would be, but it's probably going to be better than us sitting here in fear, letting fear control us. And you know what? Our spiritual life will be much better as a result as well. I guarantee that. To start letting God be our God and not our fear. Stop worrying about our reputation. Carry the message. So, where do I go from here? Guys, life is good. Life is amazing. And I've got a way of living that has been tested through trial and hardship in sobriety. I've got a way of living where I can be reasonably happy even in the worst moments. That, you know, you've heard it a million times, I'd rather have a bad day in recovery than my best day in addiction. I'd rather have a bad day in a relationship with God than a good day trying to tell God what to do. It wasn't God, it was Santa Claus, right? This is what I want for Christmas or tomorrow, right? I got to get that simple relationship straight. I got to. And the rest of my life is working a simple program that reveals to me the places in my life where I'm not surrendering that, where I'm still trying to push my will, where I'm constantly looking for the next Isaac I must put on the altar. Maybe it's my reputation. History has shown about the guy who stood up in church. Y'all ever know that? Y'all have read that in the big book. The guy who stood up in church and confessed how he cheated his competitor. In the original manuscript, at the bottom it says this was all years ago. In the original manuscript, this was all 4 years ago. He went from making this confession to being the most trusted citizen of that town. 4 years. God rebuilt that reputation. God is bigger than you imagine. Yet we sit in fear, worrying. Oh, what if someone finds out? What if? God will provide. Now, and this is a third step thing. What have I not surrendered? What must I surrender now? My sponsor says this program is about progressive surrender. Ultimately, I will have to surrender my life. I'm making peace with the fact I'm going to have to surrender walking well. That's a hard peace to make. But I know that eventually it's an inevitability. I might as well start embracing it now. Yeah, fight it as best I can, but I got to make peace with one day I'm not going to be able to do that. One day I'm going to have that third leg to lean on. But at least I won't have that rickety crutch of my addiction that failed me every time. I can still be sober, happy, and free, despite where I end up. Whatever circumstance, if I'm, guys, I have seen You know, we sex addicts don't have as deep a bottom as some of the alcoholics and drug addicts that I've seen. A lot of them on the street. They don't have a place to live. Well, they do. God provided. There's a bridge over there. There's shelter. They don't have a way to keep... Well, no, there's a way to keep warm. Well, they don't have food. No, there's food. I can... Learning from these guys that are coming off the street, I know how to live every day. I know how to get shelter. I know how to keep warm. I know how to feed myself. God provides all these things. They're out there. But guys, you know, if I worry about being on the street and losing everything, what am I really afraid of? What I'm afraid is what people will think of me. Well, there's a bum. Guys, that's my biggest fear, and I find in working with the men that I do that is the biggest fear, is what will people think of me? Why? Why? Because if they don't like me, I'll be alone. And what's the problem with being alone? Self-reliance fails me. That's what it says. It all goes back to that. The car, the house, the job, the wife, that's all just for show. It's all God's. He can take it away if He wants. Guys, when that guy stole my catalytic converter and I had to go to the shop to get it replaced, I understand now that God was not punishing me. That shop owner, he's got rent to pay. He's got lights to keep on. He's got a payroll to meet. He's got kids to feed. The guys on his payroll, the techs and the mechanics, they got rent to pay. They got bills to pay. They got kids to feed. When God takes money out of my pocket and puts it in someone else's, He's just feeding His children. That's all. He's not punishing me. God, if God takes away my reputation, it is all being done in the name of helping me grow spiritually. Because in each hardship, this thing called life is actually a gymnasium. And the muscle I'm trying to exercise and grow is called faith. And if I never pick up a barbell, if I never face my trials and hardships and work through them, I will accomplish nothing in growing my faith. And that's what I did in my addiction my whole life. I avoided responsibility. I avoided growing up by escaping into my addiction. And now I have faith that whatever God puts in front of me, it is there to help me grow in my faith. It is there to accomplish His means. And you know what? My higher power is loving and all-powerful. If He puts something in my way, it is there for my benefit. No matter how much I might not like it, no matter how uncomfortable I may find it, it is there to reduce my ego and grow my relationship with Him. And my ego needs a lot of reduction. Guys, Bill Wilson was misdiagnosed by Henry Tibout with low self-esteem, and they did that exercise of a character asset inventory. That character asset inventory comes from therapy and treatment. But Bill was misdiagnosed. He didn't have low self-esteem. What he had was an excessive negative ego. I'm the worst, right? Whether I think I'm the worst or the best, it's arrogance because I haven't earned either title, right? Guys, I'm not here to learn what's good about me. I'm here to learn what stands between me and God. And then put that up on the altar and be willing to bring the knife down on it. It doesn't mean I'll have to, but I got to be willing. Because my higher power has to know that the most important thing in my life is my relationship with Him. And not that thing He's asking me to sacrifice. Again, He may not ask me to sacrifice it, but He wants to know I'm willing because He is more important in my life than that. My relationship with my wife, my job, my reputation, etc., etc. All of those things are human constructs that bring me, that allow me the delusion of self-support. Allow me the delusion of self-sufficiency, that I can rely on self. But I know in my heart, ultimately, I will fail. And so I delude myself by propping myself with all these things like reputation, stuff. Or here's the good one, building my funeral procession. Oh, they're going to shut down the streets whenever I die. It's going to block traffic in the whole metroplex, right? Bragging about how many people I've sponsored. Bragging about how many meetings I've started. What am I doing? I'm trying to build my funeral procession, aren't I? I got to do this work. You know, true humility is when I do great things and do my best not to get noticed for it. That's real humility. That's what this thing is all about. Great things are accomplished. I don't point to me. I point to Him. So I can be a living demonstration of what He can do. Now, why did I have two floods? Why did my catalytic converter get stolen twice? So that He can demonstrate what He can do through me. Guys, why did I have to walk through those 4.5 years of middle-of-the-road recovery doing all that goofy stuff that's not 12-step? Why did I have to do that? So that I have a story to tell now. Because there's a lot of people dealing with the same thing in our fellowship. A lot of people who are going, why isn't this working? A lot of people going, I don't understand. Why am I so different? Well, because you are a chronic sex addict of the hopeless variety. And all that other stuff is not going to keep you sober long term. You're going to have to start relying on God. When I go to a hotel, I don't worry about if the TV is off. I don't have to worry about if someone's dressed a certain way and going to walk in front of me. I live my life. I don't control where I travel. I don't think about it. Because I know that in any given situation, my obsession is removed, number one. And if temptation comes, the gift of this program from God is that I will have a sane and normal reaction. I will do the, oh crap. That's not a thought process. That's not playing the tape through to the end. That's just, I got to go. Thanks, no, I got to go. It's not about managing my triggers. If you're managing your life, whoa, you admitted in step one you couldn't. If I'm making decisions to be sexual on my own, I'm managing my sex life, aren't I? That was my problem to begin with. I got to watch that stuff. Where am I trying to control this and manipulate it? Where am I thinking I'm still God? How are we doing on time? Okay. I was waiting for that time. Okay, so guys, the summary is, look at what the specific, precise, clear-cut directions say about the 12-step program. And guys, if you're working another program to stay sober and it's working for you, God bless. Keep doing it. But if it ever stops, ask yourself, did I completely give myself to the actual clear-cut, well-defined program? Or was I working some sort of hybrid, dividing myself between several programs? If someone you're sponsoring, if what you're doing and showing them how to do isn't working, have the humility to admit that they may not have the same problem and may need the original program. Don't let them die on your watch, and don't do something so egotistical as thinking that the solution is suicide. If you're not completely giving yourself to this program and what you're doing stops working, have the humility to admit, I may need the real deal. And have the humility to find someone and ask them to show you. Don't let your ego tell you that, oh, this doesn't work, when you know in your heart you haven't completely given yourself to that. Don't let someone die on your watch when what you're doing isn't working for them and it can't be reconciled 100% with this book. And with that, God bless, guys.